Good morning, folks. Good morning. It's good to be back home. Are you guys glad we have warmer weather or not? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Hey, listen, I got a couple of things I need to share with you guys this morning. One is I got a text late last night from some folks who usually come to this service. Some of you may know them. Names are Rex and Sandy Lamb. Rex and Sandy Lamb. They were on vacation a week and a half ago during spring break-ish, you know what I'm talking about, and they went on a cruise down to the Caribbean. Everyone loves going on a cruise in the Caribbean, right? They went on this cruise, they went to the beach, and Sandy has diabetes. Because of the diabetes, and she's had it for quite a while, she is numb on the bottom of her feet. And they went to a beach, and she was not wearing flip-flops. She walked on that beach for, you know, much of the day, and she came away from walking on that beach with third-degree burns on the bottom of her feet. She's in the hospital here in town. Would you please pray for her? She has infection in her feet, and for those of you who are diabetic, you know what I'm talking about. If you have diabetes in the feet, infection, Joe, you know all about that. It's bad news. And so please pray for Sandy Lamb. And also, this fellow's on your prayer list. Pray for Dan Wilcox. We just had prayer with he and his wife Megan. Dan fell down some time ago, hurt his hip, went to physical therapy, thought everything was going to be fine. Physical therapy did not help. Dan might be, correct me somebody, in their small group, might be 30 or so. They have a little child, Aiden, who is 2 years old, I believe, and they took him to a doctor. Doctor, long story short, Dan has cancer in his hip. The only way it can be taken care of is from surgery. He goes into the hospital this week for some more tests to see if this bone cancer has spread anywhere else in his body. And as you well may guess, like any of us, they're pretty shaken up. And so if you would put him on your personal prayer list, pray for he and Megan and their little boy, Aiden. Also keep Sandy Lamb on the prayer list as well. These are folks who are kind of facing some big issues right now, and I know that they would really, really appreciate your prayers on their behalf. Today, we're going to wrap up our series that we've been calling One, and in the series that we're calling One over the past month or so, we have been looking at how one person, just one person, can actually make an impact on another person. In week one, we looked at John the Baptist and how he made an impact on a lot of people around him. In week two, we looked at that one decision that everybody has to make in their life. We looked at that one decision. Last week, Jay talked about one prayer and how important that is. Today, what I want to talk about is one invitation. I want to talk about how we, as individuals, can talk to other people about church. How we, as individuals, can talk to other people about Jesus Christ. And as we begin this morning, listen to this sobering, or I should say, these sobering statistics. 85% of Americans, get this, 85% of Americans say that they would accept an invitation to church or a church event if they were just invited. 85% of Americans say that they would attend church or come to a church event if they were just invited. I mean, we think in our own minds that, you know what, people really don't want to come to church. But 85% say, you know what, I'll do it, I'll come. Now, here's a flip side statistic. Only 2% of Christians ever invite anyone to come to church. Did you catch that one? Only 2% of Christians ever invite anyone to come to church. That, in my opinion, is a tragic statistic. In the past year or so, Sandy and I have been reaching out into the community in different ways that we've never done before, and we've made quite a few new friends. And in making these friends, we always ask them the question, hey, listen, do you guys go to church? Do you have a church home? And some people do go to church, some people don't go to church. And for the people that say that they go to church, I ask them this question, why do you go to that church? Why did you begin going to that church? And almost to the person, do you know what their answer is? We go to that particular church, or we went to that particular church for the first time because someone asked us to go. Because someone asked us to go. Friends, if you found the cure to cancer, would you keep the cure to cancer all to yourself? Would you? Of course you wouldn't. You tell everybody you could tell. You'd shout it from the mountaintops, I've got the cure for everybody's cancer. You'd shout it out. And yet, at the same time, we are afraid to tell other people about Jesus Christ. At the same time, we're afraid to tell other people and invite other people to come to church. I mean, why is it that Christians are so reluctant to share their faith? I think there are two main reasons why we're so reluctant to share our faith with other people. And the first one is this. It's just that we're afraid. I said it already. I mean, there's fear out there about that. We're afraid of what other people are going to say. We're afraid that they might ask us a question to which we do not know the answer. And that leads me then to the second main reason why I think we're reluctant, and that's because of our lack of Bible knowledge. Our lack of Bible knowledge. We're not sure what the Bible says, and so if they ask us a question, we may not know the answer. We may stand there with our finger up our nose, right? I don't know. What if they ask about how to become a Christian? I don't know. We're afraid and we don't have the Bible knowledge in our head. And so today what we want to talk about is how can we talk to other people and not feel so awkward about talking to them about Jesus Christ? I mean, how do you muster up that kind of courage? How do you muster up that kind of courage to share your faith? And how do we reach a community for Jesus Christ? If you've not opened up your Bible yet, open it up to John chapter 4. It's the fourth book in the New Testament. The fourth book in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. What we're able to see here, we're able to peek over Jesus' shoulder and see how he reached out to someone who could be described as a person, I think, as the least likely person to become a Christian. John chapter 4, let's look at the first 9 verses. Now Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that he was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. So he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria, and so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus was tired. And Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, he sat down by the well. It was about noon, and when the Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" Verse 8, his disciples had gone into town to buy food. And the Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Now, when you look at those first 9 verses, what we see there is Jesus breaking a couple of different cultural rules right off the bat. Number one, Jesus was a Jew. Jews did not talk to Samaritans. It was nothing to happen. I mean, people just did not do that. And not only that, but Jesus talked to a woman in public. In the daytime where everybody could see him talking to a woman. And that was a cultural taboo. You did not talk to a woman in public anywhere at any time, especially a Samaritan person if you were a Jewish person. Now, when you look at these verses as well, I think these verses will tell us something about this lady that we may or may not know at this point in this Bible passage. We know from the verses that we've read that this lady is most likely an outcast from her community. How do I know that? Well, according to what you read in books, according to the historians, you read that people back in that day, they would go and get their water. Women would go and get their water early in the morning, and they would go late in the evening. Why would they do that? They wouldn't get the water in the heat of the day because, especially in that part of the world, in the summertime, it was really, really hot, and it still is today. And so they go early in the morning, they go late in the evening. However, this lady decided to go midday. She decided to go at about noontime. Why would she do that? She did that because, guess what? Not a lot of people were at the well. She was an outcast, and we'll find out later as to why she was an outcast. But she was an outcast. She didn't want to be at the well and have people start talking about her. And so she went midday to get some water. So by virtue of the fact that she went midday to get some water, she was most likely an outcast in her community. Now let's look at verses 10, 11, and 12. Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?" Now, I want you to notice in verse 13 that we're going to read in just a little bit, I want you to notice how the complexion of the conversation begins to change. Look at verse 13. Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks water will get thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become a spring of water welling up to eternal life." Now Jesus has this lady hooked in the conversation. Look at verse 13. The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go and call your husband and come back." Verse 17. "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." You see, Jesus has suddenly taken this conversation from here to hear. He has really ramped up, he has really amped up the conversation. And her response to this, beginning in verse 19, is to go another direction than what Jesus wants to go. Look at verse 19. "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." Jesus wasn't talking about worship, was he? Jesus wasn't talking about Jerusalem. Jesus wasn't talking about the mountain where the Samaritans worship. What Jesus was talking about was her husbands. That's what he was talking about. Verse 21. "Woman," Jesus replied, "believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in the Spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is Spirit, and his worshipers must worship in the Spirit and in truth." The woman said, I know that Messiah called Christ is coming. I know he's coming. And when he comes, he'll explain everything to us. And then Jesus declared, I, the one who is speaking to you, I am he. I am the Messiah, he says. Now, from these verses and a couple of more verses that we're going to read in a little bit, from these verses, what I want to do is to draw out some principles that we can use in everyday life in order to talk to other people about Jesus Christ, in order to talk to other people about his church. And here's the first key that I want you to write down. Look at your notes. The first key to sharing your faith is this: we have got to be willing to go where people are. We have got to be willing to go where people are. Jesus was always on the lookout for people. And you can look through the Gospels. I don't think you can find a place in the Gospels where Jesus really went out of his way just to talk to people. I mean, Jesus talked to anybody and everybody he possibly could talk to who crossed his path. I mean, stop and think about it. The number of people who crossed your path every single week. That's a lot of people, right? A lot of people cross your path every single week. I mean, Jesus met this woman at the well, at Jacob's well, a woman who just crossed his path at Jacob's well. Question: where is your Jacob's well? Do you know what I'm asking? Where is your Jacob's well? Where is that ordinary place that you come into contact with unchurched people? Where is that place? Is it the office? The construction site? Maybe you work on the production floor. Maybe it's there. Maybe it's at school. Maybe you're walking your dog. Maybe you're at the gym and you run into a lot of unchurched people. Where is your Jacob's well? Where do you rub shoulders with people? And as you rub shoulders with people, and if you want to talk to other people about Jesus, if you want to talk to other people about the church, you need to understand that there are some barriers that you need to cross in order to talk with them about Christ or about the church. And I've got in your notes, there are five different barriers. What I'm talking about are three different barriers today, not five. That's my bad. So three different barriers, and the first barrier is this. It's an image barrier. The image barrier. You may or may not remember me saying this, but I've said before that the church is no longer the home team in our culture. Do you remember years and years ago, or maybe seeing it on TV programs? Years and years ago, Sunday was reserved for church and church alone. Sunday was reserved for church activities and nothing else. That's all Sunday was for. It was for church and church alone. Today, we're not the home team. Today, we're the visiting team. And whenever the visiting team takes the field, guess what happens? The people in the stand, they go, boo. We're not the home team anymore. We're now the visiting team. And whether we realize it or not, there's a lot of unchurched people out there who feel that way about church kind of people. Unchurched people see the church as a place that's just nothing but boring. It's boring. It's not a place I want to go to. It's a place that really is not relevant to my life anymore. I mean, why in the world should unchurched people get up out of bed on a Sunday morning, and why in the world should they spend 2 or 3 hours in a church building? I mean, they could be out golfing. They could be out fishing. They could be out doing any number of things, but why go to church? In fact, unchurched people see church people as weak and needing a crutch. And so we've got to be aware of those kinds of barriers. Here's another barrier I think we need to be aware of, and that's a cultural barrier. A cultural barrier. Unchurched people oftentimes feel like outsiders when they come to a church. They can't relate to the music many times. That guy talking up there for 30 minutes or so, man, I could do without that. The terminology that we use in our church sometimes is pretty strange. And in fact, if you don't believe me, I challenge you, go visit another church and see how comfortable you feel in that church. I mean, you go to another church, the preacher's going to be talking a whole lot different than what we do here. The music's going to be different than what we have here. They may do communion, they may not do communion. If they do communion, most likely they do communion differently than what we do. And the terminology they use will be totally different than the terminology we use. You see, when you bring your friends, when you bring your acquaintances to Fairfield, you need to be aware of the fact that they're somewhat uncomfortable sitting there. And so what you've got to do, I think, in my mind, you've got to walk with them through the church service just so that they can feel as comfortable as they possibly can. Now, here's a third barrier, and that's the gospel. I call the gospel barrier. The gospel barrier. We've got to be careful with our language. And I think we do a pretty good job here at Fairfield with our language. But we've got to be careful because we might use words, we might use terminology that will cause people to prick their ears up and they go, what in the world are you talking about anyway? I have served in churches, and some of you have been in these churches. I have served in churches where we have had a narthex. Has anybody ever been in a church where you've had a narthex? Anybody ever been in a church where you've had a vestibule? Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, a lot of times you use those words in a church, and an unchurched person would go, wait a minute, what in the world are you talking about, right? I mean, even with the word foyer, some people might raise their eyebrows and go, what in the world are you talking about? Or you know what? We're going to go to the sanctuary, and we're going to worship God in the sanctuary. Bird sanctuary? Is that what you're talking about? I've been to bird sanctuaries, but what are you talking about sanctuary? You see, my point is this. We've got to be aware of the words that we're using. We've got to be aware of what we're doing. We've got to be aware of these barriers that are in front of people who don't know the church, who don't know Jesus Christ. 6-year-old Bobby was asked by his mom what he learned in Sunday school one Sunday. And he says, well, Mom, I was in Sunday school, and the teacher told me all about how God sent Moses to Egypt to save the children of Israel. And Moses led the people of Israel, the children of Israel, out of Egypt up to the Red Sea. And then Moses... engineers, they built this massive pontoon bridge, and the children of Israel walked across the Red Sea on this pontoon bridge. And then once they got to the other side, Moses called headquarters. They sent all these bombers over to the pontoon bridge, and they bombed the heck out of this pontoon bridge so that the children of Israel would be safe. And the mom looked at her son. She says, Bobby, is that true? I mean, is that really what the teacher told you? Well, Mom, that's not exactly what the teacher told me, but if I told you exactly what she told me, you would never, ever believe it. We've got to be aware. We've got to be aware. Here's a second key to our sharing our faith. Quite simply, we've got to become a friend. Just simply, we've got to become a friend to people. Have you noticed that... the longer you're a Christian, the fewer unchurched, non-Christian friends you have. Statistically, according to statistics, if you've been a Christian for 1 year, most likely you have 20 unchurched friends. If you've been a Christian for 2 years, you then most likely have 10 unchurched friends. If you've been a Christian for 3 years, most likely you then have 5 unchurched friends. However, if you've been a Christian for 8 years or more, chances are you have no unchurched friends at all. And do you know why that's the case? It's the case because in the church, we're developing our Christian friendships. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But the more Christian friends we develop, the fewer Christian friends we have. I mean, it's a good thing to be involved in a connection group. I talked to you a little bit ago about Dan Wilcox, right? The fellow who has cancer in his hip. Going to have surgery, going to have the hip taken out and have a prosthetic piece put in. But they're in a small group. They're in a small group. And it's nothing wrong with being in a small group. We need small groups. There's nothing wrong with being a part of a men's study or a ladies' study, a men's group that meets for breakfast or a men's group that meets for lunch or a men's group that does this or a ladies' group. There's nothing wrong with those kinds of things. However, here's the problem. If you only hang out with your Christian friends, you're missing the reason that God's put you on this planet. If you never intentionally invest in the lives of unchurched people, you're missing the reason God put you on earth. Do you know why Jesus came? Do you know what Jesus' mission was? He said it plain and clear. He said to seek and save the lost. That was his reason for coming, to seek and save the lost. We can never invite unchurched people to our church. We can never introduce unchurched people to Jesus Christ if we never spend time with them. We've got to be intentional about that. I read about a month ago this quote, let's give them what so few people will, our time, our hearts, our listening ears. People will most often come to love us sooner than they'll love Jesus. People will most often love us sooner than they will love Jesus. In other words, as a Christian, we have got to be good news before we can share good news. Does that make sense? You've got to be good news. You've got to be the Christian. You've got to be the little Jesus on earth and telling other people about him. You've got to be good news before you can share good news. Let me venture out and give you my opinion. I think some of Christian TV, I think some Christian TV preachers give Christians a black eye. And I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to push anybody away. But I think, especially on Sundays, and you can watch church TV any day of the week, but I think some church TV preachers just really give a bad impression about Christians. I mean, a non-Christian, a non-church person will be flipping through the channels, and they come across this one channel, and it's nothing but a lot of weird stuff on that program, right? I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? It's just totally, totally weird kind of stuff on that show. And they think to themselves, you know what? If I go as so-and-so to that Fairfield church may be like that church that I see on TV. Or that church, that Baptist church on the corner may be like that church I see on TV. That Presbyterian, that Methodist, that whatever it might be, that may be like that church on TV. What we've got to do is to be a friend to these people and win their confidence and show them that we're not like the weird people that we might see on TV. We've got to be a friend. And speaking of friends, do you know what the Bible said about Jesus and friendship? The Bible said about Jesus, he was the friend of sinners. Jesus was the friend of sinners. I got a couple of words I want you to write down. They're not in your notes, but write these two words down, would you? The words crisis and change. Write down those two words, crisis and change. You can invite a friend of yours, a family member of yours, to come to Fairfield one day, and they might go, hey, listen, I appreciate the invitation, but no thanks. A couple of months later, you find out that friend of yours that you invited, they got invited to another church in town, or maybe another church in another town, and they went with them, and they're continuing to go. And you're scratching your head going, wait a minute, why in the world do they go with them and not with me? It may be due to crisis and change. You see, when you ask them to go to church, they may have been in such a place in their life that they didn't need church. However, when that other person asked them to go to church, they were experiencing a change. They were experiencing a crisis in their life, and they really needed church. And so what kind of a crisis am I talking about? I'm talking about things like job loss, health issues, case in point, Dan. Or how about this? How about this? It's a death in the family, or maybe an addiction that they're dealing with. And what are the kind of the changes I'm talking about? How about the birth of a first child? That can be kind of traumatic sometimes. Or someone who's newly married. That can be traumatic sometimes, right? Or maybe a couple becomes an empty nesting couple. Their last child has finally left the nest, and they're there all alone, and they need to go to church. They have a time in their life that is changing, and they're open to the gospel. You see, there are a lot of times when people are open to the gospel. A survey asked one time this question: what would make you turn to church for help? What would make you turn to church for help? And here is what people said. 26% of people said, I would turn to church if I were facing death. I would turn to church if I were facing death. 25% losing a loved one. 19% health issues. 11% drug addiction. 10% moving. 7% getting married. Folks, I'm not talking rocket science here. I'm not talking brain surgery at all. All you have to do is look for a moving truck, a moving van in your neighborhood. Look for a moving van at your apartment complex. And this is what you do. You see the moving van, you see the moving truck. In a couple of days, or maybe that day, I don't know, whenever you want to do it, you take to their house a plate full, or maybe a Tupperware full of homemade cookies, your very best homemade cookies. For me, it's chocolate chip. I call it chocolate chip evangelism, okay? I do it a lot. Neighbors on both sides of us, across the street, neighbors everywhere, they move into the community, they move into the neighborhood. I take them a Tupperware full of chocolate chip cookies. Chocolate chip cookie evangelism. I go over there, I knock on the door. Hey, I'm Lynn. I live across the street, next door, or wherever it might be. And you know what? Just welcome to the community. I've got some chocolate chip cookies here for you, and I'd love for you to have them. Just welcome to the community. That's brought quite a few of our neighbors to church. Not just here, but in other churches as well. That's all you got to do. If you don't know how to make really, really good cookies or a really, really good homemade pie, Talk to someone to make you a homemade pie. Talk to someone to make you some really good homemade cookies and take them over to somebody's house that's just moved into the community. And also, with that, why don't you do this? And I've not done this yet. I just got this idea a few weeks ago. Why don't you do this? As you take the cookies or the pie over, why don't you take them a piece of paper and have on that piece of paper schools, pharmacies, grocery stores, post offices, hospitals, and their phone numbers and their addresses. Hey, listen, welcome to the community. Here are some cookies, and here's some stuff you might be able to use. It's worked for me. It's worked for me. Jay showed you this card just a little bit ago, and I got to thinking about that card. You know what we could do with that card? Here's an idea. Maybe you could put that card or maybe a dozen of these cards on your desk at work. Oh, wait a minute, I don't work in no office. What are you talking about? Okay, I used to work in a little manufacturing company in Indy, and we had a lot of guys on the production floor, welders and assembly people and that kind of thing. Why don't you put a little stack of cards at your workstation? Why don't you put a little stack of cards on your workbench? And someone comes by, hey, what's that all about, man? It's just church. Hey, love to have you, man. I'll sit with you when you come. Wouldn't that be wonderful? That'd be easy to do. Such an easy kind of thing to do. All we got to do is to talk to people during crisis and change. Here's some more statistics. Losing a job will cause people to come to the church. 4% said having children will cause me to turn to the church. And here's a sobering statistic. 37% of people said, I am not going to go to any church under any circumstance. 37%. I am not going to go to any church under any circumstance. Now, hang with me on that statistic, because with that statistic, you've got to think to yourself, you know what? That means then that 63% of people would come to church if I would just ask them. If they're going through crisis, if they're going through change, 63% say, you know what? I'll consider going to church, and I might even walk with you and sit with you. I'll go. Be a friend to people. Here's a third key in sharing your faith, and that is move from the trivial to the spiritual. This is a tough one for me. I have difficulty with this one. Move from the trivial to the spiritual. I mean, how in the world, especially when you're starting a brand new conversation, a brand new friendship, how do you ask good questions, right? So you spent the winter in Florida, huh? How was that? Hey, you were in Florida for the winter. I stayed up here. And man, I tell you what, it was brutal up here during January and February. It was just brutal. Never thought winter was going to end. Unbelievable. Hey, how about them Colts? You know, are they going to win a Super Bowl ever again? Hey, listen, I saw a tweet of Jim Irsay just last week, and that tweet said that Jim Irsay believes that if the Colts win a Super Bowl, they won't just win one Super Bowl, but they'll win three Super Bowls in a row. What do you think about that tweet? Or, hey, what about the national championship this next week? Who's going to win? Is it going to be Texas Tech, or is it going to be Virginia? Who's going to win? Or how about them Pacers? How about Oladipo? Is he going to come back full strength in the new season or not? You see, just ask questions. I didn't mention church. I didn't mention Jesus at all. Just ask questions. Start the relationship out. And some relationships will take longer than other relationships. When we lived in Rockville, we lived at Raccoon Lake. We had some neighbors of ours, just wonderful people. We moved in, and the lady lived there, and her boyfriend moved in shortly after we moved in, and we started a relationship with them. About 2 years after the relationship had started, and especially me with him, about 2 years after the relationship started, he found out that I was a pastor. He came down, walking down the hill, down the road to our driveway, and he used many times colorful language. I'll just leave it right there. He came walking down the hill. I was working outside of my garage in the driveway. He said, hey, Coleman, why in the blankety blank 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 world didn't you tell me you were a pastor? Steve, I really didn't think it really mattered that much that I'm a pastor. Well, man, I sure would have liked to know, blanket. You know, from that relationship I had with Steve, it took me 2 years to get to that point. But from that relationship I had with Steve, we finally got Steve into our worship band playing the electric guitar. I did the wedding ceremony in their backyard, in their gazebo, about 3 years after we met. I then did the funeral for the lady's grandmother who lived across the street with her son and daughter-in-law. We got them into church as well. Just by being a friend. Just moving from the trivial into the spiritual. And really, I didn't have to move it into the spiritual conversation. Steve's the one who moved it into the spiritual conversation with his colorful language, right? And so ask questions. Be a friend to people. Do all religions lead to heaven? Hey, what's it take to get to heaven? And don't start a conversation out by saying, hey, listen, do you know Jesus? Mm-mm. Do you know God? Could you say for sure that if you died tonight, would you be going to heaven? Don't start a conversation like that, because it will end just as quickly as it began. And the friendship will most likely end as well, because they'll think that you're some kind of a freak. I mean, do you remember Jesus talking to the lady at the well? Remember that? Jesus' conversation and talking to the lady at the well, he started out by talking about what? Water. He ended up talking to the lady about spiritual water. He moved from the trivial into the spiritual. And then he said, hey, listen, go call your husband. We got to talk. And she says, whoa, back that truck up. I'm not going there. You know a whole lot more about me than what anybody else knows. What's going on? He didn't start the conversation by saying, woman, you're a sinner. Hey, woman, you've had five husbands. You live a life of ill repute. You're going to go to... No, he didn't start a conversation like that. You see, what Jesus wanted to do was to give her hope and to give her purpose. And in the process of the conversation, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but in the process of the conversation, this lady at this point started steering the conversation in a different direction. Do you know what I'm talking about? She started talking about worship. Jesus wasn't talking about worship. She started the conversation going in a different direction. And a lot of people will do that with you here today. If you start talking about church, if you start talking about spiritual things, they'll start taking that conversation in a different direction. That might be a sign for you. In fact, I've had this conversation a number of times with people. Have you ever had this kind of a conversation? Hey, listen, you ought to come to Fairfield with us sometime. We'd love to have you. Oh, I tell you what, man, I'm never going to go to church in my life, because they're full of nothing but hypocrites. You see, a lot of the people that you talk about church, a lot of them, guess what? They've already been to church. They've had a bad church experience. And now their opinion of church people is that they're nothing but hypocrites. How do you recover from that? I'll tell you how I recover from that. You know what? You're exactly right. Church is full of a bunch of hypocrites. Sorry about that. Yeah, they're full of a bunch of hypocrites, and I'm one of them. And the only reason I go to church is because I need a lot of help. I need help myself so that I'm not a hypocrite. And I go because I need help. And the Samaritan woman, she started to steer him off track. Jesus kept going back to the true worship thing. Jesus kept saying, hey, listen, true worship is in a person. True worship is not in a place. We go to church not because of the people, but we go to church because of our relationship with God. We go to church not to be seen. We go to church not to be patted on the back, but we go to church because of a relationship with Him. You see, true worship is in a person. True worship is not in a place. And the person is Jesus Christ. Let's wrap things up by looking at the fourth thing. Expect God to work. Expect God to work. Look at John 4:28, 29, and then I want to jump down to verse 39. This is really good stuff here. Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see the man, or come see a man who told me everything I did. Come and see. Hey, listen, come, see, listen, Check this guy out. Could this be the Messiah, she said? And then down to verse 39, this is the coolest part. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him. Why do they believe in Jesus? Here it is. Because of the woman's testimony. Because of her. Did you see what happened? Jesus was a friend to her. And do you see what can happen in your life, in your witness with people? All you have to do is to be a friend of these people, and God's going to be the one who does the heavy lifting. God's going to be the one who does all the work. The Holy Spirit's the one who's going to be doing all the work for you, not you. And I believe that one lady had a major impact on her community because of the one invitation. She went back to her town, and she said, "Come and see." In fact, how does she have a major impact? She had a major impact because it says later on in the text that they asked Jesus to stay with them for 2 more days. Yeah. They were so impressed with what Jesus had to say. They were so impressed with what he was telling them and preaching to them and teaching them that he stayed for 2 more days. Would you please stay a little bit longer? And why was that? Because of this lady's testimony, because of the change in her life. You see, her life was changed, and she issued one invitation to all those people. A few weeks ago, I had these magnets that I passed out to a lot of you. They're called a neighborhood map. On the top of the magnet, it says, "Who is my neighbor?" Ask the question, "Who is my neighbor?" In the very middle down here is your house. It's the one that's highlighted. I'm colorblind. Is that yellow or is that green? Yellow? Okay, thank you. The other houses around it, I can tell this color. It's gray. What I want you to do is, does anybody not have a neighborhood map for their house? If you don't have one of these, would you please raise your hand? Because I want you to take one of these. Yeah, Garrett, would you pass some out? Great, great. Cool, thank you. Raise your hand so you can get one of these. Take this neighborhood magnet, and what I want you to do, your house is in the middle, and the other gray houses around there are the houses that surround your house. What I want you to do is to find out the name of those people who live around you. I want you to find out the names of those people who live around you. I know the names of most of the people who live around our house. And what I want you to do is to pray for those people who lived around your house. Pray for their health. Pray for their well-being. Pray for their kids. Pray for them in any way and every way you possibly can. And then also pray, "God, would you please somehow, some way, lead me into a spiritual conversation with them. God, I don't know how I'm going to do it. God, I'm not a very spiritual person myself. God, I don't know how to say all those big flowery things like they say in church. But God, would you please somehow, some way, help me to have a spiritual impact on those people and pray for them?" And what you might do is say, "Hey, listen, if you have a pretty good relationship, hey, we got Easter services coming up. It's going to be a great service. And I tell you what, love to have you. Would you like to come? We're going to have Dan's Donuts." And you might get some people say, "You know what, I'd come if I'm not going to come, but could you bring me some Dan's Donuts back, you know?" Pray for those friends. Pray for those people who live around your house. And if the situation is right, invite them to church on Easter Sunday. That might be the very first day of the rest of their eternity walking with God. You don't know. That might start a spiritual relationship with them that you can have a big part in leading them into a relationship with Jesus Christ. And my question to you is, do you know him? Because you can't lead people into a relationship unless you yourself have one. And I hope and pray you have a relationship with him. Let's bow our heads and pray, shall we? Our Father in heaven, we have talked about some pretty weighty things today. And those things are eternity. People who don't know you, kind of like that woman at the well who had no idea who Jesus was, but she wanted that living water that he could give her. And God, we can talk all day long about statistics. God, we can talk all day long about whether it's right to do it this way or whether it's right to do it that way. But God, the bottom line is you have given us a command, and that is found in Matthew chapter 28. Not just Matthew 28, God, but it's found in other places too. that we're to reach out to people. We're to lead them. We're to make disciples. We're to teach them. We're to grow them deeper. God, help us to be that kind of a church. Help us to be that kind of a people. Help us to be those kinds of individuals who yearn to see other people know you as their God, as the one that they follow. God, if there's somebody here today who doesn't have that relationship, God, maybe there's someone here today who needs prayer. God, please speak to our hearts, speak to our lives. And God, I pray that we'll listen to what you have to say. God, we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. If you have anything on your mind today for prayer, Joe's over here for prayer. John is over here, and other people will be pray with you up here as well. Maybe you would like to give your life to Christ today, or maybe talk about church membership. I'm telling you what, we'd love to talk with you about that and even pray with you about that. Let's all stand, shall we? Let's sing together. I'll meet you up.